Welcome to episode 349 of the Spokesman Cycling Podcast. This show was engineered on Sunday, 17th of March, 2024.
The Spokesman Cycling Roundtable Podcast is brought to you by Turn Bicycles. The good people at Turn are committed to building bikes that are useful enough to ride every day and dependable enough to carry the people you love. In other words, they make the kind of bikes that they want to ride. Turn has e-bikes for every type of rider, whether you're commuting, taking your kids to school, or even carrying another adult. Visit www.turnbicycles.com, that's T-E-R-N, bicycles.com, to learn more.
I'm Carlton Reed. On today's show, I'm talking with Tom Knights. He's the Senior Manager of Partnerships and Marketing for Strava Metro. This is a super useful active travel city-making dataset service from the Athlete tracking app. And if you bristled at the word athlete because you think there's no sport in transport, listen on. Strava Metro was very, very insistent in 2020 about how successful cycling and walking and all active modes because of the pandemic. And the blog posting was, you know, we're very pained to say this. However, yep. You know, it's really, really, we're going crackers with the amount of cycling as, you know, the bike boom did go amazing. Now, the bike industry right now is famously and woefully massively down in the dumps. So what have you seen with usage? So what has happened since 2020 to actual usage of bicycles, not just, you know, we know the sales are bad, is the usage bad also?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And actually, like I say, the kind of prequel to Strava Metro kind of suddenly going free was actually very well timed, unfortunately, under very difficult circumstances globally. One of the reasons, like I say, we'd kind of made Strava Metro free wasn't actually because of the pandemic and the looming kind of crisis and obviously this switch to human-powered transportation. It was, like I said, almost like an unfortunate timing, but obviously beneficial for cities and all the planners that start to use this data. So, yes, we definitely saw this huge boom during the kind of 2020-21 era. And thankfully, because a lot of cities and a lot of regions and governments had the foresight to start investing in protected cycle lanes, in safe routes, which we know is one of the biggest barriers to people actually kind of picking up a bicycle, a lot of those initiatives have stayed. And we hope that they've stayed because actually they've been able to see some of this Strava activity through Strava Metro and then use that against other data sources to start to understand actually, is this being used? In terms of trends and overall, we've definitely seen more of a normalization. But again, what we are seeing is obviously people looking for alternatives to either commute, and in the world of kind of 2024, the word commute looks a bit different than maybe it did in 2019. But anything that's a utility trip, and essentially through safe and accessible infrastructure, that's what we know. And I'm sure you know from all the kind of conversations you've had over the years, that's the biggest driver to people making it feel safe. So long story short, yes, we've definitely seen a normalization now. In terms of the growth.
Normalization, that sounds like quite a bit of a euphemism for what?
So I guess the new normal, as it were. So we've definitely seen that growth. And then now what we've seen, like I say, is people who are consistently cycling now. And then obviously we hope that through infrastructure improvements into society, into communities, that will then also encourage even more folks to pick up a bicycle. On that front,
I'm going to carry on digging here because I think it's quite important. So that graph that was on the Strava Metro,
I remember it well. The human powered transportation one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean that was great, but you know, so when you mean normalization, is that graph it went up like crazy, yep. And do you mean by normalization that it went down? So usage is down, or has it plateaued?
So not. I mean, it's difficult to say. I wouldn't say plateaued because we're always seeing kind of growth, and that's what's so exciting A, and I can't necessarily allude more about the Strava, core Strava world, because of course that's a different kind of department, as it were. But in terms of the metro world and what we're seeing in terms of cycling in general, we've seen that spike from 2019 to 2020, that continued growth into 2021. And now what we see is probably more of that kind of continuous steady growth, as opposed to that. But I wouldn't say we've definitely seen any kind of drop off, as it were, on that front.
So it's interesting because we now have metrics that we just didn't have, you know, 10, yeah. 15, 20 years ago. From an industry perspective, you know, you used to be able to track sales of number of bikes, but you never knew whether actually people, even though there were fewer bikes sold, actually people might actually be riding more, potentially. So now we have metrics from you, people like you, where you can not only track the number of bikes sold, but you can also track roughly whether people are using those bikes. So that's fascinating information from a market point of view. And the way I'm going from on that is you've got some high-end holiday companies, you know, Glorious Gravel, yep. going to Sri Lanka, Namibia, all these amazing places with people who've got clearly a lot of money and a fair bit of time.
Yeah.
Still getting out there cycling. So when we haven't seen that end shift at all. But no, that's the rarefied end, isn't it? That's like, from usage, absolutely. From a metro point of view.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of, saying travel and tourism, that is obviously a kind of luxury end, for kind of people, having the kind of means to kind of jump on a plane or to kind of visit and take the time off. And that's great, though, for kind of seeing that boom, because we want people to kind of get introduction to cycling in general, and if that means discovering it on a holiday tour, fantastic. Hopefully that then translates into cycling into work, maybe 2 or 3 days a week, or suddenly dropping a car trip once a week because they've discovered the joy of cycling. But I think generally what we're hoping, though, is we see this bike boom fueled by better and safer streets. That's for us our kind of main concern, is that if you build it, I know you've heard this phrase a lot before, if you build it, people will come. And we know that from Strava Metro data, when you look at the kind of streets where there's been investment, the before and after effect is amazing to see this kind of increase in trips. Now, of course, you might say, well, hold on, isn't that just Strava growth? But actually what we're seeing is that Strava Metro data alongside, EcoCounter or Telram data, you can start to kind of normalize and build a model. And I think that's what we're hoping, that people can start to, as you mentioned, all these amazing data sets, start to pull these together and then really build this picture to kind of tell a different story than perhaps maybe the negative stories are saying, in terms of, cycling boom's over, or no one's using this bike lane, etc.
And this is an obvious question. Okay. And this is a question that I'm sure you are incredibly well used to batting away, and you know you're going to get it, and you could almost do it yourself. So that is, in your documentation, it's all about athletes. Of course, when you put that into Strava Metro, you're talking about non-Lycra. I know you discussed this on your blogs, but just tell me now why I would be wrong to suggest that mammals, women on bikes in Lycra, why the data is robust, even though you talk about athletes.
Yeah, no, you're quite right. And it's a really good point. And I suppose from the data point of view, we're not looking at, we look at those as activities and people and trips. So the athletes is more of a kind of Strava kind of communications, and a playful way to call our community athletes. And you've probably seen various different messages over the years about, if you're an athlete, you're on Strava. And essentially there is a lot of truth in that. We want anyone who moves through human powered transportation or through moves and find that their joy in discovering movement ways, we would define as an athlete, anyone who is doing that. Now, I appreciate in the world of transportation planning and bike lanes and commuting, you might not think, cycling across the Waterloo Bridge in the morning at 8:30, you're an athlete. But essentially, from a metro point of view, what we're looking to do is see these community-based trips as data points, like I say, that can be used for improving infrastructure on that front. And I think the way that actually I would position it personally is often thinking, well, everyone who uploads a ride onto Strava is a human-powered counter, because through Metro, that's going towards some kind of better cause in terms of funding and reviewing active travel investment. But I do understand your point about Mammal, and a lot of Strava's growth in the early days was fueled by that amazing core set of athletes. And I grew up in a town called Dorking, which you're probably familiar with from the classic Ride Surrey. And I'm very familiar, at the weekends, kind of seeing, the kind of more sportive rides coming through the town. But actually what that served is actually an inspiration for more people to go, actually, that is quite fun. I should try that. And I think the data we're seeing through Year in Sport that we've done, anecdotally through Metro data, that actually we've got a lot more 18 to 34 year olds who are now also discovering the joy of active transportation. And again, Metro data is telling us that it's not just, at the weekend, on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. in the Surrey Hills or on the kind of Yorkshire Dales. It's actually taking place on the streets of Manchester or the streets of London, et cetera. And I think that's what we're hoping is that story through community or athletes, as we're calling it, that helps planners to see that trend is not just the kind of Lycra brigade who are cycling. And I would argue as well, the same people that are cycling at the weekends on the kind of Ride Surrey Classics or up in the Yorkshire Dales are also the same people that are using bike lanes, and equally as important when we're thinking about counting.
Of course, you're not getting the invisible, in American terms, it's called the invisible cyclists. So these are often Latino, basically poor people on bikes who are definitely not going to be using Strava, but are going to be using bikes. And they're called invisible cyclists because they're not on bicycles that perhaps an enthusiast would ride, but they are using bicycles, and all power to their... not elbow, but power to their knees. Now, you're not capturing them. So if you're not capturing a significant number of people who are using the roads, does that not suggest that you're missing an important chunk of people who are not using, you just can't capture everybody? And how important is that?
Yeah, really, really good point. And I guess a couple of bits on that is that essentially no data set in the world is accurate. You think about a bicycle counter on the embankment or in the middle of Manchester or even in the rural area, if someone doesn't go through that specific kind of counting station, as it were, you're not being picked up in the count. And I think that's what Strava Metro is really kind of aiming to do, is essentially color in the map with all the blank spots that aren't being picked up. And being free, which is, again, one of these kind of opportunities to kind of get this data into the masses, allows transportation planners, allows safe streets advocates, anyone who's focused on transportation equity and environmental racism to dive into that data and go, okay, it looks like actually there's people going through this counting station here, but actually Strava Metro is also showing us that people are going down this route. So what's interesting, what's going on there? And again, you're quite right to call out that the heat map, for example, in maybe underrepresented areas or places that don't necessarily have the same political will of more affluent areas who have perhaps built cycle lanes or made their streets more attractive from things like heat islands. You think about kind of cities outside of the UK that suffer a lot from high temperatures. The streets are not necessarily designed for being walkable and cyclable. That's what we're really hoping. We can also use the Strava data to show what's not happening as well as what's happening. And again, a lot of the work that Metro is involved in ties back into this kind of social impact piece. It's not just, we obviously want this data to be used by, transportation planners, but we're also hoping we can start to, work a lot more with, advocacy groups, anyone, who's involved in environmental racism and transportation equity, to really kind of look at that data. And Metro, like I said, it's been designed that anyone, including myself, I'm not a geospatial professional, but I can see, through a map and looking at certain areas where people are cycling and where they're not cycling. But also we want to build a product, and I can't really, I'd say I'm not necessarily involved in the Strava product side, but we want to build an experience which is all encompassing for everyone on there. But I definitely understand your point about the barriers to entry, just in general, cycling, you need to have a bike. To join Strava, you need a mobile phone that supports, obviously Strava, although we do have connections with lots of fitness devices. But again, that comes at a cost. But hopefully, the more people that learn about Metro and the authenticity and the kind of the fact that it's free, the fact that Strava's free to join, it gives people a sense of empowerment that actually I can change something that's happening on my street. And that's a big part of the messaging that, you know, I'm working on and certainly have been working on for the last 5 years. Because as you say, maybe the association with Strava is it's just for athletes or, you know, people who are doing KOMs and QMs, etc. But actually what we're seeing is that more and more people are turning to Strava, you know, to kind of log their activities, and hopefully through when they learn about Metro, they'll realize that they're actually changing their communities because that data is really kind of playing a part in helping to shape, you know, better infrastructure or essentially build a political case for more investment.
Good point. So somebody like me, who's been a Strava member since 2013, I discovered by looking into my profile this morning. And
thank you for your long-term membership.
I would say I'm not a frequent updater, but I should be, shouldn't I? So what you're saying is people like me who have it on our phones, don't use it, you know, because I don't consider myself an athlete,
yep,
but should be turning it on for even everyday journeys because it helps.
Spot on. I mean, you know, I'd have that in writing and as a quote, you know, when we kind of go out to advocacy kind of events and talk to kind of people, because I think, as you've just said, you know, the more people that discover about this, you know, cycle of, like I say, Strava being free and then wanting to make streets better, and then Metro obviously enabling that, we think there's a really compelling story. And I generally, this is such a passionate thing to kind of work on. And I think we're very lucky, you know, in part of the Metro team to be able to have these conversations with partners all over the world. And I think, you know, we've met at Velo City a couple of times before. And, you know, the one thing that comes up all the time at these conferences is, you know, oh, how are we measuring it? Or how do we win the case for safer streets? And, you know, this is our answer to that. And to say, well, let's come together and bring all these amazing data sets that are available out there and, you know, let's build a case and get people to see that this is available.
And those data sets, the expectation is, from your point of view, that a transportation planning department will be using multiple sources. They won't be just using Metro. They'll be using their own counting devices, hopefully, if they've got them. And they'll be plotting everything, and they'll have some sort of, will they have a desktop with everything on, or have they got to look at lots of different screens?
Yeah, so what we hear from partners is that they use a lot of geospatial kind of software. You know, there's obviously various different enterprise kind of grade level software and data analytics tools where you can almost ingest multiple sorts of data. So we make extracting the data from Metro, which is, I'm sure, hopefully everyone realizes, it's completely anonymized, obviously, and then also aggregated. We make that very easy for partners to essentially download and then upload back into, like I say, all of this data planning tools. And obviously, you know, there's multiple data sets out there. And largely, like I say, we use the same mapping tools as well. So OpenStreetMap is really important, you know, in terms of actually how do you paint a picture of your infrastructure in your area. And like I say, planners will then use that to build reports, to kind of maybe produce research, and then essentially come up with this kind of R number, which says, you know, for every X number of trips on Strava, you can say that there's 100 trips of non-Strava usage, for example, say normal Strava. And we've seen a couple of examples that, you know, the Office of National Statistics have done that in rural and remote areas. Transport for London have been using it to kind of model traffic lights through London and the timing that, you know, you get on green times, you know. And it's not just Strava data. We don't want to build cities just around one particular user, but that's why being, like I say, a free tool to do that allows us to kind of plug into all these other data sets.
Let's go backwards a little bit into I'll use your term, the athlete. So you basically got a rider.
Yeah,
going along, I'll use London, even though I'm like 250 miles away, I'll use London as an example. So going along the embankment, yes, you've anonymized all the data. So this is not, you don't know this particular person on a bike at all. You can't track anything, but you can see at a granular level whether they are on the road or whether they are on the embankment cycleway, and you can see where they make that, you know, sudden turn. Like there's a few turns on the embankment where you've got to make quite a shift to get onto the cycleway. So you in Strava Metro, you can see that happening.
Exactly that. So we can see, like I say, the I think there's something like 420 million edges in the whole world. So edges are referred to as streets on OpenStreetMap. And if you've got some enthusiastic mapping listeners on this podcast, hopefully they might be able to write in and correct me and tell me how many exactly edges there are. But if you think about the world as all of these kind of different edges and routes that are built up, where there's been a Strava activity gone over the top of that, and of course, where there's been a minimum of three, which allows us to kind of aggregate those activities, we can exactly that, show you where people have turned left, how many trips went off on a certain direction. Was this route busier because of a road closure 1 week, or was this route more improved year on year because of a safer kind of passageway? You know, appreciate we talk about cycling here, but if you think about running and walking, you know, was this improved because there was better lighting, or were more people using this pathway because, you know, there was a kind of nice new path put down? So I think this is it. It's like I say, it's this kind of colouring in the map with all the other kind of data sets that are available. And then Strava can kind of tell you that picture of where, you know, there has been activity.
So when Nick Ferrari goes on the radio and says, I got stuck behind a cyclist on the embankment, they should be on the cycleway, you could, or anybody could go to Strava Metro and say, well, actually, that must have been just a completely unusual person, because look, 99.9% of cyclists are going onto the cycleway, and here, look, we can show you the heat map where that is happening. That's what you can do.
Exactly that. And like I say, one call I would say is it's not anyone. So that was one of the caveats to the authenticity of the kind of Metro project. And I know that word authenticity is thrown a lot, you know, about, but the only reason Metro works is because the Strava community buy into this idea that the data is being used for something good, not for, you know, commercial purposes. So not anyone can access Metro, but TfL can access it, for example, in your example of the bike lanes in London. London Cycling Campaign could access this because, of course, you know, they're involved in advocacy work. Unfortunately, LBC wouldn't be able to access this because obviously they're using it for other purposes. But actually, anyone involved in safe infrastructure. And we hope that this is it, you know, when the transportation teams, all these different mayoral authorities or local authorities can actually go, actually, what we have seen on this street is that X percentage of people are using this bike lane on there. And that's what I think is going to take to kind of not win the argument, but really convince people that bike lanes are being used and they're a good investment. They're just incredibly efficient because you never see anyone in traffic in them because yes. People are constantly moving.
Yes. Now, I know you're not on this side of it, so it's a slightly unfair question to ask, but I do want to like get you to tell me about it anyway. So at the end, not now, but at the end, I'd like you to go through and just tell people how much it costs to, you know, to go the full fat version of Strava. But yep. Before you do that, and that's going to be at the end anyway, just confirm this right now. You do not need to. Yes, Strava Metro is free for transportation planners and anybody else, but you don't need any. You're not going to get hassled to become a pro member, to be one of these people like me who just want to, you know, do good for the community by turning Metro or Strava on for our normal daily rides. You won't be charged for that. You can get a free membership that will do everything apart from all the pro level stuff that you don't need anyway if you're just one of these lapsed people.
Yeah, it's possible. So, you know, Strava is always operated on that kind of freemium model, as it were, that, you know, at its simplest, you can download the app, join the community, upload a ride, and then if you've made that ride public, so I should have added that caveat as well, contribute to Metro because, of course, you know, people might want to hide the start and the end of their journeys, so they won't count. And people might want to also hide a certain route. But hopefully, like I say, when they hear about the project and go, actually, this is a pretty good idea, I should, you know, start uploading my routes. And maybe, you know, further down the line, as they kind of start to explore Strava and they want to kind of look at a route, or they want to kind of go, oh, that could be quite a good tool to have because I've got more into my cycling journey, then yes, of course, Strava is open for them. But at its source and at Metro, they are both free.
Okay. At this point, I would like to cut away to my colleague, David, who will give a short ad break.
This podcast is brought to you by Turn Bicycles. The good people at Turn understand that while a large cargo bike can carry oodles of stuff, many of us prefer something, well, a little more manageable. That's why they've come up with the HSDE cargo bike for folks with big aspirations to go car-free, delivered in a compact size. With its rear shock to 80 kilos and a combined hauling capacity of 180 kilos, the robust new HSD is stable and easy to maneuver, even when under load. And with its Bosch e-bike system, tested and certified to meet the highest UL standards for electric and fire safety, you'll be able to share many worry-free adventures with a loved one, whether it's your kiddo or Nan. Visit www.turnbicycles, that's T-E-R-N, turnbicycles.com to learn more.
Thanks, David. And we're back with Tom Knights of Strava Metro. And I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, and as you do when you want to talk to somebody and you want to find out their background, and you've kind of a similar background to me, in that you did classics, you did like nothing to do with what you're doing in your day job. you did like, well, tell me what you did. It was at Exeter University. Exactly what you did at university.
Exactly that. So I kind of found myself essentially looking at degree subjects where, you know, I was interested in more the kind of anthropological aspects of history and actually classical studies. And I'm always very much told by classic students that classics versus classical studies is a very different subject. Mm. Obviously, one focuses heavily on Latin language and Greek text, whereas classical studies is more about, you know, the discovery of what was going on during the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire period. So that was always a passion of mine, about kind of understanding society and maybe what was the kind of political kind of themes of the time, and, you know, fascinated about some communities on there. And of course, the story for the dad joke, but like mm-hmm. most people, when you study history, there's no future in it.
I'll use that.
Apologies.
Use that as a dad joke. Thank you.
But yeah, obviously, you know, that allowed me, you know, I suppose, to back in the kind of early 2000s when I was at university, you know, it was a very privileged time when there weren't necessarily crippling university fees and structures. So it allowed me to kind of study a subject which was more of a passion project. But of course, you know, didn't necessarily allude me into a specific career working in the British Museum or on an archaeological site in antiquity. And actually, in hindsight, I think geography would have been more of my passion, because that's ultimately what's kind of landed me in this area of transportation and maps and bicycles. Geography was always my kind of first passion.
Mm. Well, you're a man after my own heart, because I did a degree that was nothing connected to what I eventually did, and that was religious studies and comparative religion. And I did Hebrew as well. What? So I did do a not a classic language, but I did a language that was known to antiquity. So yeah, we've come similar backgrounds. But then if you look at your career progression, it went very quickly from something that's completely useless to, in effect, your career, if I look at your career arc, has been certainly tech. So from the very first, it was, you went from classics, blumenek, to tech. That's quite a leap. And then you've carried on that trajectory.
Yeah, definitely. I think that kind of, you know, also almost juxtaposes the kind of interest in history. But I think as a lot of my friends maybe went into, you know, in the early 2000s, like most people kind of found their way going into financial services, I'd always kind of been more interested in the world of tech and technology. And then working, you know, my way up through various kind of research firms and kind of people teams in that world of headhunting and kind of early days of search when it comes to kind of jobs and careers, allowed me, I suppose, learn a lot more about the world of tech. And then actually through, you know, interviewing people and candidates and helping people on their search journey, that then opened my eyes into this whole world of, you know, kind of software, which again, the early 2000s was really interesting. And then tied into that passion for sports and maps and mapping, landed actually initially at a company when I lived in Hong Kong for 5 or 6 years, which was doing event registration for marathons and 5Ks and stuff like that, which is obviously very relevant to the Strava world nowadays. But it was when Strava Metro came along and said that they were looking for, you know, someone to essentially grow the community on Strava Metro in Europe, it was too good an opportunity not to kind of put my CV forward. So, you know, tied into all my passions around mapping and transportation.
And getting out there and doing stuff, as in
yes,
being an athlete, if you want to use that term.
Exactly. And, you know, that's it's an interesting, you know, point to kind of call on. But essentially, the advice, actually, the CEO at the time, who was a gentleman called James, and actually Michael Hovarth, the founder of Strava, both said, the most important thing you can do in this role at Strava Metro is get out there and see bike lanes and infrastructure and really understand what the kind of partners are doing. So over the last 5 years, that's kind of allowed me to get involved and actually see some of these projects. And, you know, one of the best moments of the year, or certainly at conferences or events we go to, is whenever there's a bike parade and whenever a bike tour or a technical tour around the cities that you go and visit. And you can really start to see the, you know, how those numbers come to life actually in the physical world. Because again, we focus a lot on, you know, on this talk, we talked a lot about the embankment, but actually there's a whole multitude of examples around the European continent and also across the world of bike lanes, which we visited and gone, gosh, that's really interesting. What an innovative design. And oh, look at how that impacted this number of people.
Tell me about your day then. So you kind of suddenly flagged out that you're sometimes traveling around a bit. So, What do you do, Tom? Describe what you actually do to people who don't know what you might be doing day to day.
I love it. So my biggest kind of responsibility is to grow the awareness of Strava Metro. And obviously, the more people that hear about Metro, hopefully from listening to this, the more people might go, hey, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. So essentially, that's our main focus, is to speak to the folks at Active Travel England through to the city of Paris. And obviously the onset of Zoom and online meetings has made that a lot more accessible now, which is great. So as much as I'd love to go and visit all these places, a lot of them are done by kind of video conferencing, which has allowed us to scale and obviously tell the story in a kind of much more scalable way. But where possible, I'll always try and visit partners and learn about what they're doing on the ground. And then actually one of the biggest kind of task this time around is to then, how do we communicate those back to the Strava community, and then get all these 120 million athletes who are on Strava to actually learn about these projects that their movement has contributed to? Because that's going to be the power of when they understand that your cycle to work, even though it's providing you with, you know, your exercise or your means of transportation, it's also having a big impact on how, for example, you know, Transport for Greater Manchester or Transport for London are building your roads and your cycling. So if it helps with that extra bit of motivation to get out of bed on a kind of cold January morning to kind of, you know, get cycling or walking to work, then, you know, we've done our job.
Isn't there an argument, and I am playing devil's advocate here a little bit, a council employee, a transportation person, or maybe a councillor, could actually use your data, which shows there's lots and lots of people using a certain road at a certain time.
Yeah.
And you would say to a council officer, well, look, we need to improve this route because look how many cyclists are using it. We need to improve that. So it's more comfortable, besides blah, blah, blah. But, you know, a councillor could use that exact same argument and say, well, why do we need to improve anything? You're just telling me there's loads of cyclists using this road. Great. Job done.
Well, and I think the answer to that is the kind of the theory that maybe, you know, a lot of highways and motorways around the world have used, which is one more lane will fix it. And what happens when you get one more lane will fix it? You get more cars driving. Well, I think the principle for that applies in terms of, if you keep fixing and increasing the number of cycle paths and bike lanes, then you'll see an increase in even more cyclists on there. So that would be my kind of caveat to say is, you know, the same way that we saw, you know, mass growth of roads and kind of infrastructure around the country, the same way that you could, if you keep investing, you'll see those increases come even more as well. So it's just the start. I think this is the kind of the key point. And, you know, this has only really been, well, I've been in the industry for 5 or 6 years in terms of specifically around the world of transportation planning. And I've read your, you know, as another student of history, read your history of bike lanes. And what we're seeing is nothing new. You know, this obviously happened in the 1920s, as you've written about. It's happened, you know, in the early 1950s. And we hope that obviously this bike boom is going to continue. But we know that the secret to that is obviously infrastructure, but extra secret sauce, and I'm going to say this with my Strava hat on, so apologies, is that, you know, other people keep other people motivated, and that's where Strava comes into it as a motivation machine.
So the gamification of it, almost.
Exactly.
Which is a good segue, thank you very much, into my next question, which will be about the White House. So that's a that's a gamification. So just tell me exactly, I mean, I know it's not UK, but this is a podcast that goes, you know, it's very popular in America. So Strava, not Strava Metro, but Strava is working with the White House on something. So just tell us what you're doing and then the gamification angle of that.
Yeah, so from obviously my understanding of internally of the team that's been working on that, it's very similar to other kind of projects or campaigns or like I say gamification or challenges that we would work on. This time though, there's obviously a social impact cause attached to it. I think what's happened, and from what I understand, is that the White House obviously have a campaign or a kind of cause that they're looking to mobilize a community on. They had a commercial partner in Whoop, which is obviously kind of, I suppose, helping to kind of measure that through the wearable side. But the White House is partnering with Strava to support physical activity as part of its challenge to end hunger and build healthier communities. Now, as part of the social impact strategy, like I say, the call to action is to raise awareness of that campaign through movement. And obviously that movement lives on Strava. And it's very similar to lots of other campaigns that we might work with from brands, but also other charities, you know, that might want to also mobilize their community on Strava through that kind of challenge format.
So that's a US initiative, obviously. It's the White House, as in the White House.
Yep.
What other stuff might you be doing UK or maybe even worldwide similar to that?
Well, I think ultimately it's if we've done our job right, and you know, the more people that learn about these challenges for good, for social impact, we hope that people will start to see Strava as a platform where they can actually start to tell their message to what's a very engaged community. You know, like I say, not every cyclist is on Strava, but we do have, you know, in the UK, again, I'm going to correct myself on here, but it was 1 in 7 adults has joined Strava, or something around 15% of the population. So that's not everyone, but it is a very engaged audience.
That's bonkers, actually. So how many, what's that in millions? Is that like 10 million downloads or something?
I will come back with some specific figures, and James can help with that on our team. But yeah, certainly we obviously were in the millions of kind of users in the UK. And of course, that's a really engaged community who are using Strava, A, for their movement, but also then can attach that through a challenge, through a social impact campaign or a brand campaign. And again, these challenges are completely optional for people to dive into should they wish to. And I think that's one of the kind of key things to kind of the Strava community, you know, having that say in what they do. And that's what's probably kept people coming back to Strava over time, is that they have a choice in what they can join. And the challenge is that the team in Bristol, who in the UK run those operations for similar to the White House challenge, they do a fantastic job of making sure that there's some really exciting challenges to come onto the platform and keep people motivated.
So can you now tell me the different pricing options? So people are like, they've got the free version, they may be like me, they will now start using the free version a bit more for the reasons we discussed before. But if you wanted to up the game, what would you be paying and what would you be getting?
So for UK based users, obviously Strava Premium is an option, and that costs $8.99 per month or $54.99 per year. Obviously there's the freemium model in terms of the kind of ability to join Strava and not have to, like I say, necessarily choose to subscribe. But again, the compelling product kind of opportunity that the product team in the US and all the amazing kind of engineers that work on Strava have built an experience that, should you wish to subscribe, there's a really compelling reason to, mostly through our amazing routing, mapping, discovery tools, looking at new routes to explore. Obviously, like I say, you've got access to technical data should you wish to kind of see things like your heart rate and health and kind of segments and leaderboards, etc. So there's something on Strava for a lot of folks. And of course, you know, that community element and clubs and groups is really exciting, and another way for local authorities and governments to really drive engagement back to Metro, for example.
And then you've got things like integration with FatMap, so you can like do all sorts of stuff with that as well. Because Strava, did you buy FatMap? Is that, was that?
Yeah, so there was a strategic acquisition of FatMap, and you know that's I suppose the exact date has been going on for the last year. So again, all these amazing tools and mapping tools are such a good driver for people to discover the world around them. And I think that's what's really exciting is that, you know, yes, you might go on a bike ride and, you know, kind of cycle from A to B on one of the cycle highways. But at the weekend, that same bike hopefully is being used to then go, that route looks quite interesting. Or I saw my friend do that route, you know, the other day. That looks like I could probably do that. I've got a spare couple of hours. And, you know, it's basically just keeping people active. Again, you've probably heard this one: for every minute spent on Strava, you can attribute 30 minutes of activity back to your kind of daily life. So rather than
that's because you look at a heat map. You say you're in an unusual destination. You don't you got your bike, and you fire up the heat map. It's like, oh look, everybody's gone that way. Oh, I'll go that way then. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, essentially. You know, like I say, it might just be on your activity feed that you've kind of been suggested a route or suggested an area to kind of move through. And I think that's what's really exciting is when you get somewhere new, you know that there's a community. Because obviously we're a global community that has cycled there before. And I say you could either look at the heat map or you might be able to see someone's route and they've recommended it as a kind of place to ride. But that inspiration you get from not just, like I say, scrolling through maybe another social network or doom scrolling, should I say, hopefully that movement and inspiration of people being active is something that's going to be a positive driver for people being, you know, engaged on Strava.
So there is another active travel analogy, which sometimes gets wheeled out. And that is, you can't tell why you need a bridge from the number of people swimming across the river. Because they ain't going to swim across the river with a bike. They probably ain't going to swim across the river, full stop. But when you put a bridge in, it suddenly gets, you know, the heat map would go crazy once you put the bridge in. So is any of your cleverness, your tech, can any of it kind of like spot, well, if you only had something here, it would open up, you know, is there something that you can pinpoint that you can say that a bridge analogy could be used?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for asking that, because that's something we just updated last year in our Metro product that obviously the planners and the transportation teams can see. And a lot of it ties back into some of the kind of accessibility, transportation equity, environmental racism that we talked about. What we've shown is that where you put a pin on the map, we've also been able to kind of draw almost like a kind of circle around what's accessible within, say, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, etc. And people can see data within that kind of circle, which, again, will show you that where there's a massive motorway with no bridge crossing, that part of the community can't access the park on the other side of it. Or where there's, for example, a big brownfield site where there's been industrial use, it's not safe to cycle through. So people have kind of diverted around it. We had a really good example actually recently in Germany where, there was a curb on the side of a bike lane, and you could see very clearly actually through desire lines on the actual grass and the verge that people were kind of going off this curb through the woods to kind of cut out maybe a mile. And again, using Strava Metro, this, you know, German transportation team, who are based in Frankfurt, actually, I'll share the example with you because it's fascinating to see how even at a really small local level, these little changes can make a massive difference. And they're not expensive to do. I think it only cost them something, a couple of thousand euros to drop the curb, because they then saw that was having an impact on where people were then cycling. So, you know, the famous analogy of when it snows, you can really see the desire lines of cars. Actually, when you look at the desire line on the heat map and then in turn look at that on Strava, you can start to see, oh, that's interesting. And again, another great example of that was Hertfordshire County Council had a bicycle counter in one location, and they realized that the Strava count was actually higher than the bicycle counter. And they thought, well, hold on, what's happening there? And actually, there was a kind of dangerous crossing just slightly further up from this bicycle counter. And they were able to then use the Strava data to kind of, I suppose, understand that actually people were going this way because it was a safer journey. And that's the, these are the kind of insights that, yes, we want to do the big high level projects and, you know, make sure that we get new infrastructure and cycleways across major cities. But actually the really exciting ones are when local advocacy groups or local councils who don't necessarily have big budgets for, you know, accessing data can make these small changes and really improve these kind of everyday life for their community.
Can the Netherlands, which obviously everybody looks up to as like the absolute nirvana of cycling, do you have like Dutch people go, oh, we could use this? It's like, Jesus, they're even improving even more than us. So basically, can you improve the Dutch cycle network?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, we've had some interesting conversations with the folks over in Copenhagen and obviously in Amsterdam and across the Netherlands as well. So not just Denmark and Holland, but of course, the Netherlands is such a bellwether of the cycling industry, but they're always looking at new ways to improve the technology that they're using in counting data. We were in Leuven just at the end of November for the Polis Network event. And again, we are understanding that the kind of technical university there at Leuven have been using Metro to kind of understand, you know, and this is a really forward-thinking Belgium city, which has got great cycle access, but they still need data to understand and count it. So rather than, you know, developing another app to count people and get the community to download it, they've seen that correlation between actually Strava and Strava Metro. So again, they don't need to necessarily go and kind of reinvent the wheel, so to speak, with, you know, building another kind of engagement tool with the local community to get them to join, and because Metro is hopefully fulfilling that service.
Brilliant. Tom, that's been absolutely fascinating. And we could go on for a good amount of time, probably on classic literature. Even
I know. Mind, well, we can discuss stuff. What's your Roman Empire?
Yes, exactly. But we can't, because we people just won't listen to 10 hours of us chatting away.
Hopefully, they've got this far.
I'm sure they will have done. Now, could you tell us where people can find out? I'm sure people know how you can get onto Strava, but how they find out about Strava Metro, and maybe how they can contact you.
Yeah, definitely. So the best way to get in touch with myself and Strava Metro is on metro.strava.com. And then on that website, you'll be able to learn more about case studies, about how cities, how researchers, how communities have used the actual kind of practical steps of the data. There's also some frequently asked questions on there about, you know, privacy and how the data is used, etc. And then most importantly, there's an apply button. So you can click apply for access. And then what we ask is that, A, you're a organization that is involved in working to improve active transportation. If you're a consultancy or an engineering firm, we also accept those applications as well. As long as you're under contract with, say, for example, the local government or the city authority. We don't want Metro kind of appearing as a line item, as it were. And then, again, like I say, at its source, transportation planners around the world can access. We ask that you use a work email, not a Gmail email. So normally a .org or a .gov, etc. And then just a short abstract, essentially, of how you're going to use the data. So then we know that it's being used for a positive kind of cause. And then we'll give you access to the area of interest that you've selected, be it London, Birmingham, Somerset, wherever it is. As long as there's been Strava activity, you can start to see trends and patterns. And then hopefully feed that into other data sets to build the infrastructure.
And nick.ferrari@lbc.co.uk or whatever his email address is. It will just be rejected out of hand. That's nefarious use.
I reserve the right not to comment on LBC and Nick Ferrari.
Thanks for listening to episode 349 of the Spokesman Podcast, brought to you in association with Turn Bicycles. Show notes and more can be found at the-spokesman.com. The next episode, 350, will be out next month. Meanwhile, get out there and ride.